Hello and welcome to a late summer episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler, joined by my co-host, Matt. And coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by a recent Dayton Flyer and member of the Red Scare TBT team that we all got to enjoy watch playing this summer, Daryl Davis. But first, we're just going to dive into the mailbag real quick. Thank you to everyone who sent us some questions. We are not going to cover all of them today. We're just going to hit on three of them. We will continue to answer them as we go through September here. So thank you. There's some good ones in there, and none of them are going to be answered anytime soon. So keep tuning in to our future episodes to hear them. Matt, where should we kick things off?
It's a good question, Tyler. Still in off-season mode a little bit, so hopefully we can give some good answers here, but I guess we might as well just start at the top of the conference, talk about some potential contenders, if you want to go over to that one.
Yeah, so we have really two questions that are pretty similar here. Bana_Nation, asks us, who do you think will disappoint the most out of the top three or four? SLU, Davidson, VCU, Dayton. And then Connor Bailey asked us, out of the top three, assuming it's Dayton, SLU, VCU, in whatever order, who has the greatest chance of not finishing in the top three? And lists some of the teams in the preseason who did not do so in the past few years. Yeah, obviously the most recent example, St. Bonaventure in 2022, preseason favorite, and then finished in
fourth,
I believe. Yes.
And then Richmond also. Fifth. Richmond was picked second and finished sixth. So salvage the season though, but this is a good question. I think with all those examples, it's a good reminder. Like, I agree with Connor. I think Dayton, St. Louis, and VCU are going to be pretty much the consensus top three, but there's a really good chance that at least one of those teams, maybe even two, will fall outside that range. And I think it's a tough question. I've pretty much had the mindset all year or all off season that these three teams are pretty neck and neck with each other. You know how I feel about VCU. I'm not going to say them as my answer because I think there's a good chance they win the conference. I'm kind of stuck between Dayton and St. Louis though, because both of them look very good on paper. I don't know which one I give the edge to at this moment.
So a quick note, we're going to basically answer Connor's question because I think right now Davidson's just a notch below those other teams talent-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I have them somewhere in this. Actually, we'll talk about that in a moment with the second half of Bona Nation's question. But I'm going to make the question, who is most likely to finish outside the top four? Because I actually think it's two different answers. If it's outside the top three, it's just VCU because VCU just doesn't have as much talent as the other two, at least not on the top end. And so the odds that VCU is like a first four team or a high level NIT team are just higher than the other two. But if we're talking about who has like a truly disappointing season here, where all of a sudden they're like a team that's going on the road in the first round of the NIT, or maybe even worse, I think I'm going to say St. Louis because I think the pathway to VCU being good is it's so wide. They have so much depth, and like we've raved about Zeb Jackson. That's a guy that we're both really high on as a potential star transfer. Well, if he just isn't that good, they got a lot of other options on the wing. St. Louis, they're the most volatile team in this entire conference by far right now. They could blow everybody away. They could be top 15 in the country. It's not that hard to see that. But at the same time, let's say Javonte Perkins isn't healthy. Let's say that Francis Okoro just doesn't kick the foul problems that it looks like he got rid of at the end of the year, but maybe not. They don't have a ton of depth down low. Like, there's a lot more things that could go disastrously wrong for St. Louis than for the other two right now. Like they have a ton of talent, but if Perkins isn't an all-conference guy, I'm not sure it's a lock for them to be top two, top three.
No, I don't think it's a lock for anybody to be top three, really. But I think you bring up some good points. I'd say the same about Dayton, though, where I think we should feel like we know a little bit more of what to expect from Dayton since they bring back every major contributor from last year's team. But we also saw the same exact group lose a couple of very easy games. And you could argue that's a different team than what we saw at the end of the year, but those bye games still happen. So,
I
you know,
think,
Dayton's very alive to blow some stinkers.
I just think Dayton has a lot, will have a lot easier time plugging holes that might come up. Whereas if either, let's say either Kamara or Holmes doesn't take a step up this year and maybe even regresses, you still have a star down low. And then that just means you're going to need to rely more on Mustafa Amziel. Maybe it's Caleb Washington. Maybe it's Azimi Nwokedie. Return to decency. St. Louis, all it pretty quickly, once you get outside of the top, the starting five, and then Jalen Pickett and Terrence Hargrove, it's a lot of talented guys, but it's a lot of freshmen. And it's a lot of players that we don't know anything about. And then Dayton, I'm throwing out the first two bad losses. Like they're just gone. I just don't even think about them anymore. Austin Peay is still decently relevant, and LaSalle is obviously relevant. But those first two games, like Malachi Smith basically didn't play. They're playing a ton of guys who ended up just getting booted out of the rotation and transferring before the end of the season. So, like the UMass Lowell, that literally wasn't even the team they had the rest of the season.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Well, to actually answer the question, I think I am going to say it's St. Louis, although not by any stretch do I think they're going to be bad. I think they're a good team, but you know, I'm going to get some comments for this probably, but they still haven't finished above fourth place since Travis Ford's been the coach. They've pretty much been consistently locked into that four or five range the last few years, so we'll see if they can break through, but they haven't yet. And I guess to answer though, you know, going back to Bonner Nation's question, who's going to disappoint? I do kind of think Dayton and St. Louis are both going to mildly disappoint their own fans' expectations just because they've gotten so high. Like, I feel like there's been a lot of top 25 discussion for both teams. That just seems a little bit ambitious. Both of them could certainly get there, but I'm not quite feeling that
I
yet. Like, I know
feel
Three Man Weave has put out
extremely
their
good that one of
preview.
them is getting there.
Is it though? Like, how many times is there a top 25 team at the end of the year in the A-10? Dayton did it when they went undefeated. Rhode Island was in the top 25 all year with the last year with Hurley. It doesn't happen that
I mean,
much.
I don't feel like either of these two teams is that far off from being at the level of that last Rhode Island Hurley team.
Well, it could be, but
This
for
St. Louis team
now,
actually has a lot of similarities to that with the veteran presence. Basically, kind of that one good young guard, Rhodey had Doughton. St. Louis has Jimmerson.
yeah, it could. But I still, you know, the three-man weave, who they do great work. If you're into college basketball outside the A-10, give their podcast a listen and read up on their previews. But they had Dayton and St. Louis both in like the 30 to 35 range. I think that's extremely fair right now. And that's about where I would have those teams. So I'm not sure I'm feeling top 25. We'll see if they get there.
Yeah, I we'll talk about this more in depth later, but I think one of them does. I think one of them delivers us a top six seed this season because they're both just so talented. One of them is going to hit possibly even better than we expect. One of them will certainly be at least a little bit disappointing, hopefully not more than that. So we'll carry on to the second half of Bonner Nation's question here. Who will surprise us the most out of the rest? And to me, I think you can generally put the teams, if we're getting really lazy, into three tiers here, where it's the three we just discussed are the top. Then you have probably the three Pennsylvania teams and GW at the bottom. And then the other eight are just somewhere in the middle, where certain teams, people are going to make cases for them to be in the pillow fight. I think basically everyone in this group is at least going to be argued by someone to be number four. And so I think we need to both of us really go on record and just pick who is our team from this group. Because someone in this crew is going to be really good. They're going to finish second, third, fourth in challenge for an NCAA tournament bid.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be surprised if there isn't someone outside the preseason top three that is on the bubble at some point. But I have two. I guess I can go on the record with one of them since I know more about them, I feel like. But George Mason could potentially start five seniors if they want to. And you add that into having Justin Fernandez, who's arguably the top-rated freshman in the conference. I think that gives them a lot to work with. My problem saying George Mason is that, like Dayton, they also lost a ton of bad games last year and were just wildly inconsistent. But if you want to believe that year two of the Kim English era is going to be more successful and more consistent, I think there's a lot of talent over there. My other option's Rhode Island, just because of Archie and some of their newcomers, but I don't know quite enough yet to be as confident, although I do think they're going to be in the top half for sure.
I think I've come to a place where between Mason and UMass, one of them is going to be somewhere in like the 9-10 range, and the other one is like a legitimate bubble team, NIT home game team. I don't know fully which one I want to take yet, but I'm pretty sure it's George Mason now. I keep looking at the roster. And it's just like I talked about with Dayton. It's obvious they're not in the same talent level as Dayton right now. But I think they just have so much flexibility and malleability here that if the guys they go to in November don't work out as they try to replace Deshaun Schwartz, as they try to finally figure out a full-time starting point guard, I just think there's so many other options they can turn to. We know Oduro is going to be a player of the year candidate no matter what. I think we both really love Ticket Gaines and what he brings to that team. Right now, he's the ultimate glue guy of this conference, and maybe he even ascends above that this year. But I don't know, if a few of these freshmen hit, whether it's Fernandez or Devin Dinkins, that one of those guys is a legitimate top three rookie in this conference. Then this starting lineup looks really, really whole here. They're gonna, and also I feel great in saying that they're gonna be an unbelievable top three, top four offense in this conference. If they can figure it out defensively with some of those veteran grad transfers that they brought in, then they're a lot closer to the bubble than people think they are. It's a big if, but we need to bet wildly on one of these teams, and I think it's Mason that I want to go with here.
And what excites me about George Mason too is just the upside. They beat a lot of good teams last year. We all remember the game at Maryland early on, but they beat Dayton, St. Bonaventure, and Richmond in conference. They also almost beat Richmond on the road. I think that was a Gilliard buzzer beater that night. So they showed they can play with the top teams in the conference. Unfortunately, their record just doesn't look very good because they missed Oduro for a few games. They even had a mini COVID pause in January. So, didn't finish the season quite as strong, but they showed that they can compete. And I think they're going to end up being my pick for this too.
I mean, look, if I told you right now that in the same week they could beat St. Louis 90 to 85 and then lose to Duquesne 85 to 80, like, does that sound that crazy at all?
Not really. I mean, if it's last year's Duquesne, yeah, but if you think Duquesne's going to be better, then no.
Duquesne will, they're probably still a pillow fight team, but Duquesne will not be as bad as last
No,
year.
I like Duquesne.
We'll
I'm in
talk
on
about
Duquesne.
them more later on, but yeah, I'm just gonna bet on the ceiling right now. I think that team's gonna be an offensive juggernaut. All they got to do is just be better on the defensive end than last season, and they're sniffing top four.
Yeah. Right. Want to
All
get
right.
into our other question?
Yeah, one final mailbag question we'll cover today. This is comes from JJ Gottschalk, and he asks, other than the Rams, obviously, what moniker should GW go by next year if it could only choose from other A-10 schools? Of course, GW's got a little bit of a naming controversy right now. We're not going to cover that at all. But I think this is actually really easy. Wouldn't they just be the Minutemen? I know that that's specific to kind of that Massachusetts, Boston, Paul Revere's Midnight Run specific region, but it's still revolutionary, birth of this country. It ties in with Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think that's fine. If you want to go with a historical name, that might be the best option. I was thinking, you know, my favorite mascot is the St. Joe's Hawk. And if we could name GW the Hawks with the condition that they have a mascot at the games, like home and away, I'd love to see dueling Hawk mascots a couple times a year. So I think that's my answer.
That's a pretty good one. The other one I was thinking of is it could just be the Wildcats, because that's just kind of generic.
Yeah,
there already has got, to be we already
the
got
most.
Like 15 Wildcats, like how we got too many Rams too.
It's either the Wildcats or the Tigers. That's the most common name in Division I basketball. So yeah, that would be the easy way out, I think.
Or Billikens, just to piss off Ryan Paleo, but that would really be the only thing to gain from that.
Should we have our own name for GW this year? Like the GW football team? Or like, do we just not want to give this attention?
I actually kind of want to, because like, say what you want about the appropriateness of the Colonials nickname. It's boring. Like, it's just not that fun. And I think GW could actually kind of come up with something awesome. And I now want to challenge both of us to try to figure that out. Where if we can come up, and our listeners too, if someone comes up with some incredible nickname for GW, I think we could just start calling them that this year.
Yeah, we'll promote it. Why not? I mean, how much are we going to talk about GW this year?
Not,
unless they're surprisingly good. Yeah, it's we'll talk about James Bishop's heat check 36-point game in December, but that might be about it.
Yeah, it could be a rough year for the Colonials, and we know they'll be the Colonials this year. So, but one team that we will talk about a lot this year, good or bad, is the Dayton Flyers. We're not going to talk about that team right now. We're going to talk about one of their old teams, team that's already made the NCAA tournament multiple times, with the former Flyer wing, Daryl Davis, coming up here in a moment. All right, we are joined by former Dayton shooting guard and now Red Scare shooting guard, Daryl Davis. Thank you for joining us, Daryl.
No problem. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, you came onto our radar as someone who would be really fun to talk to years ago, your time with the Flyers, but we absolutely had to get you after this last TBT round, where Red Scare made it to the semifinals for the second time. Tough loss to Blue Collar U, but we don't want to talk about that at this point. That's been weeks ago now. We want to know, what was the best part of the tournament for you? Because you've played on this team a few times now.
For me, I would honestly say it was the fans. The intensity, the atmosphere, being able to play at home, and being able to play with some of my previous teammates I played with in previous years of Dayton basketball. And then, you know, being coached by Joey Gruden and Jeremiah Bonson was a blessing. You know, I played with them in college. They were walk-ons, but they were more like brothers, because I was able to, you know, learn from them as they were to learn from me. And the coach was there that was coached, you know, that was coaching me. So all that played a big role, and it was just a great experience.
Yeah, and is there any specific game that stands out to you at this point? You guys won four straight. The fans kept growing as it went.
I probably would say West Virginia. That was a big game. That was a big game. Oh, sorry. Oh no, Golden Eagle. That's the game that stands out the most, because of, you know, they beat us before in previous years, and I feel like we just wanted our get back, you know, and we was able to do that, you know, by having, you know, better point guard, schools, better teammates. We all dialed into that. You know, the coaching staff was able to dissect their defense and offense, and we was able to, you know, manipulate it in ways that we couldn't previous years before.
And I remember that game specifically. The announcers throughout the third quarter kept going on about, well, West Virginia, this is a Bob Huggins team, tight game. They're going to tighten things up. They're going to be the tougher team. And then you guys won that game because in the third quarter, you were the tougher and smarter team against them. So that was probably the most fun little 10-minute stretch there where you guys really threw the pedal down. But I want to ask you specifically about your performance against the money team in the second round. And this game got a lot of attention because it was Jimmer Fredette, who, of course, needs no introduction. Everyone remembers him. And for anyone who thinks he's just been out of the game for a while, he hasn't. He's been over in China, absolutely tearing apart one of the better leagues in the world. And you either played him to a draw or just flat out outplayed him, with you guys guarding each other on both ends for a significant portion of the game. Going into that, was there any kind of a different thought process because of who he was, or did you see him as just another shooting guard?
I'm always giving respect to guys, former NBA players, guys in college that I watched, looked up to, and things like that. Jimmer is a phenomenal player, very smart, can shoot the piss out of the basketball, can do it all. And I went into that game just confident and knowing myself, knowing I could defend and being smart, being patient, and just playing aggressive from the start, it was tough. It wasn't easy at all. And he had open shots that he didn't miss. But the times that I was on him, I was trying to play as hard as I could not to get him open shots and get him going in the rhythm, And then from the offensive standpoint, from my view, I just wanted to, put pressure on him because he put pressure on me. So why can I not do the same to him? I want him to be able to guard and not feel relaxed during that game. So you're going to play on both ends instead of one.
Yeah, and you were 6 for 7 shooting in that game, so you definitely put the pressure on him. But honestly, I'm more interested in the defensive end because we've always known that you can score. And going into that game, one of my concerns is that a longtime Red Scare guy, Kyle Davis, no relation to anyone who doesn't follow Dayton, but your old teammate with the Flyers, wasn't on the squad this year. And he's kind of the perfect guy to guard Jimmer. He's a smaller dude, he's an absolute bulldog. And he is at his best just annoying these 6'1", 6'2", 6'3" guys. And you know what? Honestly, people can see the Twitter receipts. I was concerned what was going to happen without him. You took that assignment and played a great game. And you've definitely grown a lot as a defender since you left Dayton. So is there anything specifically that you can credit to that improvement? Is there a skill that you've really focused on these last few years? Maybe a specific coach?
I would say I would say it started from college. High school was different. College was more up tempo and faster, and people were more stronger. And I was able to adapt. So when I got overseas, playing over there, it just carried on from college. I know that, watching Kyle, he was a tenacious defender, always upsetting guys, making them frustrated, obliterating their offense and things like that. I just you know I took some of his I took some of what he did and brought it to my own game. And I know that if I'm able to score and play defense, I can keep myself on the court. And if I'm able to shoot the ball and play defense, like I just mentioned, a coach is going to love that, guys, like I was telling some younger guys the other day, like everybody's job is not to score. Everybody's job is not to, make passes and things like that. Everybody have their specific job. So when you go get paid overseas, they're going to tell you what their job is. And my job for where it's scared was to play defense and hit open shots, and that's what I did. And I didn't take any, frustration to it. I just, went in with a hard head and did my job.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly you did your job really well for the Red Scare. But speaking of overseas, you've been really well traveled since leaving the University of Dayton. Why don't you give Flyer fans a little bit of an update on where you're playing basketball these days?
Flyer Nation, this season I haven't signed yet. I had a few offers from Kosovo League, the team that won it, Golden Eagle. I'm thinking about playing the G League this year because of the situation I'm going through with my mom, closer to home, maybe to be with her and things like that. But it's been amazing playing in Kosovo. I played in Czech Republic. I didn't play it in the Netherlands. I didn't play it in Hungary. I didn't play. Can't remember all the stops, but it's been nice. It's been nice for sure. It's been very nice.
Yeah, you're. If we just went through and plotted out a map of the places you've been around Eastern Europe, you have You've been to a lot of interesting countries. So, from a non-basketball standpoint, you've had a chance to live in all of these places, and you grew up in Detroit, you went to college in Ohio. I'm sure Kosovo is a lot different than both of those places. I'm sure that Hungary's different than Kosovo, and the Netherlands is different than all of them. So, where have you enjoyed living the most off the court?
Living the most, I would probably say the Netherlands. It's beautiful. Baby America, everything. I'm a very picky eater, and all my teammates know that. I was able to, eat what I wanted to eat as if I was back home in America, So, and then it was just everything was like, I feel like I was at home, But if I'm going to say the place where I enjoy myself at the most as a player, feel like home and things like that, I would probably say Kosovo. When I got there, they welcomed me in like I was, one of their own. And they brought me in and they always showed love and respect and support and always asked about my family, always asked what I needed, if I needed anything during the time when I'm there. And they still call to this day to check on me and things like that. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, and the league that you played in Kosovo, it's only existed for about a season now. So you were one of the inaugural guys for that very young country for anyone who doesn't know their Eastern European history. It's only been around for, I believe, about 10 years. So you've had a chance to really explore a unique place there.
For sure, for sure, for sure. I would tell, like, one of my teammates just signed over there, D'Angelo Stewart, to the team I played with last year, Prizreni. And I was telling him, like, you're going to enjoy it over there. They're going to welcome you like family. They're going to bring your wife and your daughter there and welcome you guys with open arms. And you're going to experience what I experienced and probably have more fun, but you're going to love it, bro.
Yeah, and for future players, guys who are in college right now, especially some of your Dayton brethren, which this is the A10, not everybody's going to the NBA, and quite frankly, not many are. What would your advice be to a young player on the Flyers who's thinking about going overseas and maybe just isn't sure about it? Maybe they just want to keep living in America.
One thing I would say is go overseas, be confident in yourself. Obviously, you're going to be mentally drained and homesick and have your ups and downs. It's basketball, it's life, and life's come with trials and tribulations. You got to stay the course and control what you can control. Not everywhere you go, you're going to, be the top guy or the best guy. You come in college, one of the best guys, they come in and have five or six All-Americans and things like that. So when you do go overseas, go do your job and play a role to the best of your ability. Be respectful, have patience, and get your money.
Yeah, and you keep saying play your role. And as we mentioned earlier, your role seems a little bit different than it was when you played at Dayton. You were a great shooter there. That was your calling card. Now you've improved so much on the defensive end. And one of the big things that stood out in prior years is you're a lot more of a distributor at this point. You had to play some point guard. You had to bring the ball up the court the last few years. Not as much this season in TBT because let's be honest, Scoochie Smith's on your team. Really don't need other people to do much in the way of distributing. But is that something that you've tried to work on? Is that a role that you had to take in one of these teams, or is that more of your natural growth as a basketball player?
I would say it's more natural because what's funny is in high school I was playing point guard, and I was distributing the ball, scoring the ball, and things like that. I always could pass the ball, but my main focus was to obviously try to score and get a bucket. Like you said, playing with Scooch was way more easier. His job was more to distribute the ball and things like that. So it makes it more easy for me to get my own shots because he's giving it to me while I'm wide open. And like I said, distributing the ball is not a hard thing for me. It's more a natural talent that I had. I just don't do it as much as I used to back in the day because I'm playing with more point guards like CJ and Scooch, whose job is to distribute the ball and things like that. If I had to do that, I will.
Yeah, and I mean, you had Scooch and then Jalen Crutcher at the end. So, never exactly on teams that were hurting for playmaking.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's a great passer too. He knows to get the ball to the right person at the right time. Great point guard. And I love playing him too. Unfortunately, I only played 1 year with him. But if I play with him the following year when Obinem was there, ooh, it'd be scary.
I'm just curious when you're playing in TBT, kind of going back to that. A lot of these guys like Scoochie Smith, and then also, Ryan Mikesell, Josh Cunningham, you played with these guys at Dayton. But some of the other guys on the team, like CJ, Trevor Thompson, how difficult is that to, develop a strong team chemistry that quick? Because it seemed like it worked out really well given how you guys played. But is that tough just preparing to play with a new group of guys in such a short period?
I wouldn't say it was tough because those are guys that will buy into any system. From Trevor Thompson to CJ to Joe Thompson, those guys are willing to buy into whatever the calling card was that Joey wanted. And like I played with Trevor 2 years, I played with CJ 2 years, I played with Joe Thompson in 1 year. And those guys, they know basketball. When you're a basketball player, you're able to adapt to any situation at any time, and Trevor Thompson and CJ and Joe Thompson, those guys were tenacious at adapting to what Joey was given, and they was, respectful enough to understand what their role was during the TBT. No doubts in their mind that they was upset about anything. They played their role to the best of their ability, and they showed care, heart, and trust in the system and what Coach Joey was doing.
Yeah, and I'm glad Trevor Thompson got brought up too, because him and you are really the two best examples of what I've enjoyed the most about TBT, which is now we get to see all these guys grow in their game. If you came out of school 15 years ago, you would have gone over, played overseas. We would have maybe seen your stats from like the pro loud guy on Twitter who's great at updating us on all the flyers, but we don't get to see it with our own two eyes. And so now we get to have this whole thought in our heads of, wow, Daryl Davis, great defender now. What an incredible player he's become as his career has progressed. And Trevor Thompson, the same thing. We obviously didn't follow him as much since he was over at Ohio State, but that guy is just an absolute menace around the rim on both ends. And he was delightful to watch. And if Joey or Jeremiah happened to hear this, which who knows? Maybe they do. They've been on this show before. I really hope they bring him back next year.
I think they will. I think they will for sure. Trevor Thompson, great guy, great offensive threat, can score with both hands, good hook shot, have a three-pointer, wants to win, buy into everything, and respectful. It's all I ask for. It's all we ask for as a team.
He's got a little DeAndre Jordan in him too, with just
Oh, yeah.
the vicious pick and roll dunks.
For sure. Great comparison.
Yeah, so, but it's great for us though to hear that you had a great experience playing in the TBT. And as fans, that's such a great experience for us too, getting to see old players that we used to watch in a Dayton uniform. But going back a few years
Oh,
now,
yeah.
you had a great Dayton career, 1,000-point scorer for the Flyers. I just want to get, started from the beginning. Coming out of Detroit, you were a highly rated high school recruit. How did you end up deciding on Dayton over other schools? Because you had a lot of good options back then.
That's funny. That's crazy. And I would say this, and I told my father, I told my friends and everything. I was at a visit at the Marriott down the street from the University of Dayton campus. You guys know exactly where I'm at. Archie asked me a question that I still think about to this day. He said, "What's keeping you from coming here?" And as me being young, I don't know what to say, how to answer that in a respectful way or anything like that. So my answer was, "I don't know." So he asked me again, "What's keeping you from coming here?" I said, "I'm a flyer. I'm committed to that." Things like that. In the midst of that, I had a visit to Michigan State after I left Dayton, and they was calling and things like that. But I'm like, I'm committed to Dayton. I'm staying 100% bought into the system. But like I said, when I visited Dayton, I feel like I was at home. I feel like I was already there, and I was already acclimated to the system, and like, I was with another brotherhood that brought me in the moment I stepped into campus, and it was love and it was respect. And that's what I pride myself on all the time, love and respect. And Archie and the coaching staff and them brought me in with open arms and didn't care about where I was or where I grew up and things like that. They wanted to get me a degree. And that was my main focus. And my main focus was to get me a degree and not be one of them guys that's outside industries and things like that. And what they did was they got me a degree, and I got myself a degree and bought into what they wanted me to do.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And we're certainly happy that Archie and the coaching staff were able to bring you to Dayton. But after such a successful career, being part of three NCAA tournament teams and then coming back for a really strong senior season too, what are going to be some of the lasting memories that you look back on is over your career, is just what you'll think the most fondly of being a college basketball player?
I would for sure. I would probably say playing against Chris Dunn, Providence team, at in Columbus. Obviously, I got my shot blocked at the moment by Buddy Hield and things like that. But that was one of my favorite moments. And another moment I always bring up is Jordan Seibert when we played Boise State first in the first four at our arena. He hit that big shot. That was crazy. That's the loudest I ever heard the arena. The shot was big. It was insane. It was a tough shot. Good tech for Jordan. He made it and things like that. And just the fans in general, like, you're not going to ever, and I don't see, I say ever because I don't think nobody ever in their life will experience the love that Dayton brings to the players, the intensity and the passion that they bring out of, you know, UD players and things like that. That's why we're so easy to, you know, for myself, that's why it's so easy for me to come back and play in the TBT and things like that. It was so easy for me to, you know, buy into playing at Dayton again, especially when I heard we was playing at home. I was like, oh, well, the fans are going to be there for sure. And they're going to bring the intensity and the love and the passion and things like that and the support. So that was easy for me. It was an easy choice.
Yeah, and I want to ask you more specifically about some of those great games. You mentioned the Providence win, beating Boise State. Those were the two tournament games that you guys won. And you got to play in the tournament three different times. Your first three seasons, you were with the Scoochie Smith, Kendall Pollard, Kyle Davis group. Oh, Charles Cook.
Charles Cook.
I was blanking on the other star from that crew. So outside of the NCAA tournament, it could be the A-10 tournament, can be the regular season. Is there a specific game that just still sticks out in your mind, whether it was a great team win or just an incredible moment that you yourself got to have?
Always the championship. Playing VCU at home. I think we both were like, well, we tied in the conference is number one. Whoever won a championship. I think
This
that,
happened 2 years in a row,
yeah,
this the same way.
I would say my sophomore season. I think when Deshaun Pierre was there, when Deshaun Pierre was there, that was the best feeling ever for me. For me, I've never won a conference championship. I never won championships for real until I got to University of Dayton and things like that. And then I was in the game and just being able to, my adrenaline was high, me being young and being able to, you know, get in for the 10, 15 minutes I did play. It was crazy, you know? And then cutting down the nets was crazy. And I still had the nets at home. So just winning the championship was probably the biggest thing in my career, I would
I
say.
mean, personally, that's the loudest I've ever been in. I've ever experienced UD Arena in the building for. So, certainly a great pick. Although I will say, at this point, my mind kind of blends together that with the year after when you guys were in the same situation, winner take all for the championship against VCU.
Yeah.
If I'm correct, I believe the one you're talking about is the one where the game went to overtime and Kyle Davis had the two
Yeah.
monstrous blocks on guys a good 5, 6 inches taller than him.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah, that is the part I certainly remember the most. But I want to ask you a little bit about your senior season before we let you go here, because you were a part of that crew of guys. And then basically after your junior year, everybody left. They all graduated. Archie Miller goes to Indiana. And now here comes Anthony Grant with a crew of freshmen that included Jalen Crutcher, and even though he redshirted that year, Obi Toppin.
Yeah.
And you were kind of the last key guy left. I know Zerius Williams stayed, but then he was gone quickly after.
John
And
Cross for a bit
yeah,
off.
John Crosby, Josh Cunningham had redshirted the year before, but you were the one guy who still continued to really thrive under Coach Grant, who had been a key piece for Archie. So what was that off season like? What was it like trying to switch to a different coach, trying to adapt to a new role? And just kind of going through all that, integrating with new players.
It was tough to start off because I didn't know what Coach Grant was going to bring into the Dayton Miss, sorry, the Dayton team, you know. But then, like we had our rough patches and things like that, and I was able to buy into a system. I was able to trust Coach Grant. To this day, I still love him like my own. But during that time span, it was tough, and like during the whole situation, everybody leaving and everybody wanting to transfer and people being hurt and things like that. I just, you know, bought into it. It's my last year. It's my last season. I want to make the best out of it as I could, you know. I was unfortunate that we didn't win as many games as I did previously with my other teammates, but I just bought into what he said. And Coach Grant just told me, you know, play your game, you know, do your job, control what you can control, and everything is gonna take care of itself. Jalen Crutcher was young. I was the only senior. I think Josh was a junior. I think Trey was young and things like that. But we fought hard, I would say. We fought hard. We won games. We lost games that we should have won. But I think playing my senior season and Jalen Crutcher and them being a freshman, I think it brought out the best of them because they was able to, you know, get through in the fire early. So when it came their time to thrive, they was already ready and already, you know, polished enough to, you know, win games during the time that it was hard and things like that. So I think it was a pro and a con for both ways. So I would say.
Yeah, and your stats really look different that year because you went from playing basically 20 minutes a game each of your first three seasons to leading the team in minutes that year. Your points jumped all the way up to 16 a game. So you kind of got to fill a different role while those young guys got to coalesce around you. But I want to close out the talk your Dayton career with your experience of what those guys had to go through. Your freshman year was the team where you guys were down to seven players for most of the season.
Yes.
And so as a young player coming into your first year playing college basketball, knowing every night you needed to give serious minutes no matter what, because you literally did not have the bodies to survive one of your guys not being able to go out there. What was that like physically? Because it seemed like everyone's gas tanks were running on minimal by the end.
That's crazy because I talk to this about Trey every year. Not to, you know, go off topic a bit, but we had a discussion about our seven players versus their team that went 29-2, who was better. And for me and Scoochie and the rest of us, to this day, I'm going to say us for sure. Seven guys going to NCAA tournament, playing a full season, not having a full practice, being banged up every night, and everything in the world that we went through with those seven guys, we were still able to compete and get the job done. It was challenging for me. Like you said, I was a freshman. I didn't know what to expect. I'm thinking I'm coming to college playing a full season with all my teammates, you know, because during the preseason, everybody was there. And then everybody started to disperse and things like that. So, but getting thrown to the fire early was a good thing for me. As I mentioned before, it's a good thing for Jalen Crutcher because he was able to understand things later on down the line because he was already polished and went through that storm. You know what I mean? So it was just tough, but we was able to get the job done, and I was able to, you know, do what I did best of taking a shot, taking those threes and making shots, and it made a man out of me. You know, I wasn't going to sit there and enjoy the ride. I have to go out there and fight also and compete in that war. So it was a very, very, very tough challenge for me for sure.
Yeah, and by the way, taking threes was definitely your job for that season because you've maybe the biggest gap between 3-point and 2-point percentage I've ever seen. 26%, you shot 45% from three that year. I know you were leading the conference for a good chunk of the year. I don't remember if you ended at that spot, but you were definitely top three. 19% from two, you were only attempting one a game. So.
That was crazy. I was so small, you know. My job was to stay outside the 3-point line and knock a shot down, get the pass from school, get back on defense, play defense as much as I could, as hard as I could, and you know, go with the flow of the game.
Yeah, and that was a
Yeah.
team of slashers too, so.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I think just bringing up the 3-point percentage too, just one more thing. I feel like when you guys got down to seven players, didn't you immediately go on like a five game stretch where you didn't miss a three? Like, I feel like you made 12 in a row or something crazy like that, which was one of
That
my
was crazy.
favorite just random memories from that season.
What's crazy is I didn't even recognize that I was making that many in a row at all. I didn't. Until after the game when I missed a three, they was like, "You just finally missed a three after such and such game." I said, "What? I didn't know that." I was so locked into the game, I was stuck on just shooting the ball and playing defense and trying to get wins. I didn't even know until after the game and things like that. But that comes with the flow of the game. So I was confident enough to, knock those shots down and play hard as I could.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I happen to have your game log up as Matt said this. So starting right before Christmas, going into early January, over a five game stretch, you went 16 of 18 from three. And
Jeez.
that's only because the middle game against Duquesne, you went 1 for 3. So you were 15 for 15 across the other four.
Crazy. That's
But
crazy.
I want to close it out here because you've mentioned the two best Dayton teams of basically all of our lifetimes. Your freshman season, where you guys lose to Oklahoma in the second round of the NCAA tournament, you win two games before that, and then the 29-2 Obi Toppin team that was going to be a one seed. Now, look at this team this year. They have a chance to potentially be in that category, or even in the category with your sophomore, junior year teams that made the NCAA tournament as seven seeds. What do you expect to see from the Flyers this year? How far is this team going to go?
They're going to go as far as they want to go. I can't predict how far they're going to go, but if they all buy into what Coach Grant is saying and Ricardo Greer and Hurts and everybody else is saying, they're going to go extremely far. They have a young core. I don't think they have any seniors at all. They all have been through in the fire already. They're polished enough to, sustain long games and to get through those times where it's going to be rough, because it is going to be rough. In those games and those time spans and those times where you may win, you may lose one or two games in a row. That doesn't mean you stop buying into what Coach Grant is saying, because he have won the games. His philosophy works. What he's preaching to players is do your job to control what you control, and everything else is gonna fall into place. But I think those guys for sure have a chance to. I'm a Flyer fan, so I think they're going to outright win ATN championship, and I want them guys to go to the tournament and compete and try to get to the Final Four and maybe a championship and things like that. So I think those guys are gonna be very, very good. And what's the center guy name? The tall guy, Deron and
Yep.
Malachi. Those guys are, oh, that's another probably Obi Toppin and Jalen Crutcher there.
And should anyone ever doubt a Bulldog point guard named Smith? You
Oh
had
no.
Scoochie, now they got Malachi.
Oh yeah, and Malachi is a beast. He's a beast. He his work ethic. I'm watching him practice during the TBT season. His work ethic is tenacious. He wants to win. When you got guys that want to win and don't care about scoring or doing anything, they're just buying into things, as I always say, you're going to thrive always, because he's a leader and he's setting an example by playing hard day in and day out.
Yeah, he is. He reminds us of his brother a lot. So hopefully he can continue to do that for Dayton fans, and they have a great season ahead. And hopefully you have a great season ahead as well, Daryl Davis. If you end up in the G League, we could all end up getting to watch you a little bit more. Some
That'd be
possible
nice.
NBA TV games there. So be a great little treat for the Flyer fans.
That'd be very nice.
But thank you for joining us, Daryl.
No, thank you guys for having me on the show. I'm very appreciative.
All right, another thank you to Daryl Davis for joining us on the show here. And thank you to all of you for listening. Be sure to keep tuning in. We got some great guests on their way in September. Some of our favorites coming back to the show as we start to move into our season previews. So be sure to continue listening. And if you missed it, go back, listen to some of our episodes from earlier in the year. We talked to Daron Holmes and Ryan Daly earlier in the summer. We did some deep dives into various different teams and the moves that they made in recruiting this year and where their rosters are going to line up. All of those great little pieces as you begin to prepare yourself for the season about 2.5 months away. If you enjoyed the show, please give us 5 stars on iTunes. If you have any comments, you can leave us a review on there or send us a message at the number 3 bid league pod on Twitter. Also, send us your mailbag questions. We are going to need some more good ones to get us through the month, so you can send them over right there. Hope everyone enjoyed the episode and enjoy the end of summer.